Good morning, everyone, and welcome to our monthly managed care call, joined by our partners at Amerigroup Iowa. Thankful for them continuing to join us on our monthly question and answer calls with our membership. Today is May 5th, 2023. Again, just wanting to give a brief update on information letters. I'm going to basically state the info letter number and allow you to, since I've covered them on our previous calls, just give you the number in case you're new to this one so you can go out and take a look, because that would obviously be of importance to you if you're a member of IHCA, which everyone on here is. So the first one I want to touch on is info letter 2453. That is on HCBS waiver eligibility, and it talks about like waiver slots and people who maybe haven't used services in a while coming out or losing their slot potentially. So just wanted to flag that that info letter just for your reading convenience. And would also just mention all of these info letters would have been published in our bulletins at the time of their release, or the closest bulletin to their release. So would encourage you to take a look there for additional information through the bulletin. The second letter I wanted to talk about here is info letter 2461. This is the home health listening session. And so you would, this is a call brought together by Iowa Medicaid for home health providers to discuss challenges that you're facing as a provider. And then if you have any suggested solutions to those problems on what could be done to fix them, I think that this session is a good opportunity to have that conversation. And so that again is May 22nd. That's a Monday from 4 to 5:30. And just wanted to encourage you to participate in that. And then lastly, info letter 2459, and it's just the Molina provider contracting and training update, kind of a welcome email and some resources on contracting and training with them. So with that, John, I will see if you have any opening announcements or comments that you want to make.
I just want to call out the very big looming changes in the Medicaid program coming this summer, particularly with regard to the end of the public health emergency, and which brings the end to continuous enrollment. There are members who have been enrolled in the Medicaid program during the public health emergency that may now be ineligible for a variety of factors. And the Iowa Medicaid is sending out letters called verification letters to all members. And we're just urging, anyone who's working with Medicaid members to urge Medicaid members to watch their mail and watch for those letters and respond if responses are necessary. This is you've heard, Director Matney in multiple different forums urge the same kind of message, and we just wanted to reiterate that in this forum and other forums that this is a big deal. It's probably the biggest lift from the standpoint of a change in the Medicaid program since the implementation of the Affordable Care Act Medicaid expansion program back in 2014. So that's the main thing. I will stop there and check around to see if any of the other Amerigroup associates that are in this Zoom meeting have any announcements or reminders at the top of the meeting.
Good morning, everyone. This is Dawn Hobson with the Provider Experience Team. I just had a few things. I had just made note that I just wanted to send out some reminders for everyone. I did see a question maybe in our questions regarding the 4-1 of 2023 nursing facility rate updates. And I just want to let everyone know, as far as providers and the configuration of that has been completed. In fact, we received those rates way ahead of time, so we were able to get that configuration completed by the beginning of May, the first week of May. So any billings that you have been doing for the month of April should be captured in the new rate as the updated. Of course, reminding you that, you know, lesser of logic still comes into place for that. So if you did not bill that new rate or that bill charge high enough to encompass that rate, we would not be able to do any reprocessing. But we're really anticipating that we're not going to have to do a lot of reprocessing because we received the rates ahead of time and we're able to get them configured. So that was the nursing facilities. And then I have not seen it yet, but I understand that there is going to be an informational letter coming out from the state regarding not only the EVV rollout for home health, but and the stakeholder meetings regarding that, but the EVV attestation form for assisted livings. I just wanted to remind them that we do need to have those attestation forms filed with the state, with Iowa Medicaid. If you have not done so since that informational letter last July, you need to make sure that you get that completed. We are doing a process right now to go back and reprocess claims that may be impacted by that attestation form. The criteria was it needed to be completed by a certain date. If it wasn't, by that deadline, starting in January of 2023, those claims would deny. And our edit did, in fact, you know, was set up that way. So we are recapturing those to process all of those through the end of June of this year. So if you do have any denials for assisted living, for EVV, reaching out to your provider, experience team rep, sharing that information with them, but also knowing that we're doing that internally, you know, with that, but just letting them know what you do have there. And then I mentioned the stakeholder calls for the EVV for home health, just encouraging everyone in the home health world to participate and join in on those as we kind of get, you know, in preparation for everything. They're really informative and they're really helpful with each of the MCOs participating in that to make it a successful transition and rollout for January 1 of 2024 for home health. And that's all I had right now. So if there's anything else, you know, you can put it in the chat or if you have questions.
That's great. Thank you, Dawn. Any other reps from Amerigroup have any comments? I know John kind of put it out there for anyone to talk. And if not, that is okay. Okay. And I know at the top of the call, John mentioned that he was going to be looking into the telehealth question. We had a question submitted earlier ahead of time about billing originating site credits for telehealth. They're getting paid by Iowa Total Care, but for some reason they're not on the Amerigroup side. And they listed the reason codes of G18 and 256. And so the question was, you know, what needs to be corrected? Is it something on the provider's end or on the contract side that would allow that? I don't know, John, if you have an update on that yet, or if you're still
getting any response. I'm going to drop a little bit of information into the chat because our ops people are asking follow-up questions to better understand what the provider is experiencing. Unfortunately, the G18 is a very, very general code, and we need to sort of clarify. We wanted to know, you know, what they were billing on. So I've got an example or a sample billing code that I'm going to put in chat and ask for verification. And we also want to know if this is happening on the Medicaid side or happening on the Medicare side. We have been hearing some rumbling that the DSNP product is not processing exactly correctly. But, you know, and the follow-up will be, you know, to provide some claims level information so that we can actually dig into some more specifics. But I'll put those questions in the chat so that it's captured here.
Awesome. Thanks, John. And if you are the provider that submitted that question, You know, obviously feel free to either respond in the chat or we can get information over to the team at a Barrier Group following the call too. So
there was a letter that went out on the G18 code that was a clarification letter some time ago. That will also be in the chat.
Awesome. Thanks, John. I do know that our second question about nursing facility rates being uploaded for 4.1 was addressed by Don. So we appreciate, Don, you going into some details on that. And so for nursing facility providers who have a 4.1 rate, that should be in there for all payers and should be able to be billed, which you've likely already done in most cases, as long as, like Don also mentioned, you're billing at a charge amount above what that rate is, or at least what that rate is for 4.1. There likely shouldn't be any changes to the 4.1 rate, but come 7.1, there will be a rebasing that occurs, and you'll want to ensure that your billed amount is high enough to capture any potential rate increase. Obviously, as it's widely been publicized, there was a $15 million state appropriation to nursing facility Medicaid effective July 1. And so that will be factored into providers' rates 7-1. And so you want to, again, ensure that you're billing at an amount in excess of your what your new rate could possibly be, 7-1. So just wanting to flag that. It may not come into effect as much for April 1st, as long as you're billing what your Medicaid rate is, but it's just good practice to bill at a usual and customary charge that is in excess of your Medicaid rate. So that way any future adjustments that occur are allowed to be automatically reprocessed by the billing systems at the health plans. If they are not, that would require a manual correction by the provider on every claim that was billed at a lower amount to be fixed. So it's in your best interests and the plan's probably best interests for you to be billing in excess of your stated rates. So that way any adjustments allow for auto reprocessing. So just wanted to add additional context to that. I'm going to go into our last question, which really isn't a question, but we did on our last call have some discussions, and this is home health mostly, but it also could apply to any ongoing issues that have just been occurring for providers over the last several years, I suppose. And so we did have some chats with the team at AmeriGroup following the last call and working to set up a separate non 30-minute MCO call meeting to really go through some of the specific examples of challenges that providers are facing, billing challenges most likely of what you've had. And obviously there are, I would expect to see, you know, the Medicare EOB denial being one of those. I would expect to see more than likely any challenges with AmeriVantage that providers have continued to have since the inception of that program. But basically just wanting to flag for the group on the call that we will be having a separate call, and we will want to be getting into some specifics using some examples. And so if you do have ongoing or problems that maybe aren't just specific to you, but that, you know, we've heard discussed on this call over the last several months or years, that you know that you're not the only one having this, that's kind of what we want to get at. Because if there's some kind of systemic issue that maybe hasn't been able to be corrected yet, we'd want to try to flag that and have as many examples as possible to ensure that we can provide AmeriGroup with all the information they need to research it and hopefully find a resolution. And I know that, you know, like I said, most of the time when we're on these, it's our home health agencies that are having some of the issues, but Obviously, this could apply to our nursing facility folks as well, who maybe have some ongoing troubles as well. So just wanting to throw that out there. I'm going to put my email in the chat because we will be, you can send those to me. I guess the question or one question that maybe I'll have for the team at Amerigroup is what kind of information is most helpful to you when researching these or as we're having this conversation for you to have? Is it a claim ID or is it, I guess, what's the most effective tool for you to be able to look back and see, you know, why did this deny or why is this continuing to deny for providers when we think that it should process and pay the first time?
Hi, everyone. This is Dawn Hobson from Amerigroup. I actually have, and most providers may be familiar with it, there is a template that we have offered that we ask that specific information that we really need to have a claim reviewed or even to review why a dispute did not, you know, successfully overturn the claim denial. And so I don't know if that would be helpful, Brendan, if I could share that with you just to, so you could kind of see the things that we need. It's also what we need the information if we do an escalation. And it's not a really complicated or detailed template. It's not like you have to, you know, really give, you know, everything in the kitchen sinks. It's just really the specific things that we require in order to be able to get a claim looked at and a dispute looked at if it was, you know, filed with that. So I could share that over. I'll try to drop it in the chat maybe. I don't know if my link will go in there, but I'll try to do that. If not, Brendan, I can share it with you. And then as people are reaching out, you know, maybe that's something that you might be, you know, able to, you know, share with them. This is what we need to kind of look at specific examples.
Okay. That would be helpful, especially if I can go in the chat. So then all the members on the call who've heard the discussion here are able to see that as well. And they may be familiar with the form too. If that's something that they've had to submit in the past, they may have access to that already. But either way, I appreciate you trying to include that in the chat too. I do see a question in here relating to delays in individuals who are retro approved for Medicaid. And so I think in this example, you know, someone has been approved back like 8 months. And so there are, it sounds like, some significant delays in getting those people to, I don't know if it's showing eligible in Amerigroup system in order for the claims to be processed and paid, but it sounds like they've gone through the gamut of disputes and appeals and projects. So just wanting to know if there's any thoughts on that. I know it's not like happening 1,000 times a month or anything like that. It's not like there's a huge volume of this, but it is common for there to be retro approvals of Medicaid. And especially as we're looking at this continuity or continuous enrollment period coming up, you know, you may see some more as these eligibility reviews are done, more people potentially having some retro services approved. So thoughts from Amerigroup on the best route for providers to go if they know someone has been retro approved for Medicaid and ways to get those claims processed appropriately.
Hi, and I'm going to address Kristen's comment in there too. This is Dawn Hobson, and I actually work with CARES initiatives in that. And so we definitely are aware that the retros are happening and you know, they are going back, you know, a considerable length of time, which we're not going to be able to really, you know, change that. We've, you know, had conversations and discussions with IME about how that creates, you know, issues based on the way our systems are set up and our timely filing and all that that I think you're mentioning there with that. The best and easiest way, obviously, when you get notification of a retro eligibility for a member that was eligible either a different date of service than you actually had already billed, or a brand new, you know, you never billed because you didn't even know they had eligibility for that month or date of service, is to get that claim in, you know, ASAP, which, you know, I'm sure you're doing. But unfortunately, if we are beyond our edit that, you know, requires timely filing of submission of initial claims within 180 days, it is going to hit that timely filing edit. Now, what I would suggest, you know, when that is happening, because it, you know, may not be a huge amount, but it's going to be, you know, a number of those that do get retro back, is that if you have that happen after you filed your initial claim and you did receive timely filing, I would just have you reach out to myself in your case, or all providers reach out to your provider experience representative to get that information over that you've have submitted a claim, you hit timely filing. You're not going to be able to do anything with the dispute process with a timely filing like that. If it's a true, in fact, timely filing, I don't see and anticipate us changing that timely filing deadline just for this particular issue. What we hope to change is get notification quicker, get that, you know, that retro back as quick as, you know, providers are receiving that, so that our file for the eligibility file is updated, you know, as well. The other thing that needs to happen when that occurs is that we don't necessarily have the eligibility update. We don't may not have the file as quick as you may have gotten notification of the retroactivity. So we do have to wait until that's in there. So again, you know, reaching out to your rep so we can check all those, you know, checks and balances to make sure that they're in place so that we can get those claims. First of all, getting override for timely filing, and then also verifying and validating that the eligibility screen for the claim in claim system has been updated so we can get those reprocessed. That's really going to be our best way to tackle these retro eligibilities. We've had a lot of them lately. You know, as Brandon said, we're going to be dealing with some eligibility stuff going on between now, I would say maybe in the next, you know, 6 months, as we're all, you know, we're dealing and transitioning with the additional of the rollout or the unwind for the public health emergency eligibility status, as well as the adding of Molina as a third MCO. So, timely filing, you get that, go ahead and send that over. Use that template if you have it, send over what you have to your provider, and we can hopefully take a look at that and make sure we get the eligibility validated here too.
Thank you, Dawn. Sorry, I'm responding to some comments and questions in the chat. Okay. And I do see several comments here about claims showing as pending for a period of time, 30 to 45 days in some cases. And it does look like it's a mixed bag between home health and SNF providers who are experiencing that. Do you have any thoughts on, you know, what is holding up some of these claims for 30 to 45 days in some cases?
John, I didn't know if you had any, you know, feedback on that. What I, as a provider experience rep, can share is that we are striving to meet our contractual agreements with the state, which are actually, you know, the 30 days, business days, at 90% of processing the claim and 45 days at 95%. Of the processing of claims. I think we did have this spring, we've been doing some, you know, catch up. We've had a huge influx of claims, you know, where we have had a lot of them pending for lots of different reasons. One of the things that has happened with our data migration system that occurred, it did provide the need for our analysts that are reviewing your New Day claims to actually take a little bit longer time and actually get to analyze and review those claims. So there was a little bit more delay, you know, with that. I again would you know, encourage you that if you see that beyond those timely contractual agreements that we have, that you would reach out to your provider experience rep, you know, and see if there's something else going on, if there's some question on the claim or something specific that's happening to your claims, you know, with that. We're going to have pending claims. It's just kind of the nature of the business right now. We are trying to clean up any kind of backlog that we have. We get a report every week of that team, you know, cleaning that up. And I know that providers have, you know, experienced a much quicker turnaround for processing of claims. And we're certainly trying to strive to get back to that as quickly as possible.
Thanks, Dawn. I appreciate that. And I guess, you know, I'm obviously interested in this too. And so if you, I included my email in the chat for those that don't already have it. If you are having that problem, I'd like to learn a little bit more about any kind of specific claim or specific characteristics of those that are taking longer to process, just so we can try to troubleshoot as best as possible on your behalf too. So I see a question that also came in on the G0156 visits being denied for no prior auth. It was talked about last month. Just wanting to see if a fix has been put in. Obviously, the G0156 doesn't have an auth requirement, and then it's denying, saying that it needs to have an auth. So, any thoughts on that denial?
Oh, this is Dawn again. We actually do have a huge process improvement plan right now to address this, so that we are making sure that the home health Medicaid primary claims with the G0156 should not be denying, you know, for a prior authorization. However, if they are crossed over inadvertently to the Medicare side, that is not the same, you know, it's not the same edits and systems there. So that may occur with that. If you are continuing to see the G0156 on your Medicaid primary claims denying for need for authorization, the only thing I can really tell you to do is the best thing is to get some examples over to us so we can see exactly what's happening. Is it really just the no auth requirement or no auth on file, or is there something that's you know, interceding with the reason that they're denying it that particular way? We have a process improvement going right now to try to rectify that completely, so that, you know, even if they're Medicaid, you know, if they're assigned Medicaid, they should not be denying for that. We've had that in place for some time right now, and we're just trying to get that process improvement plan of action with that. And so they're meeting on a regular basis to address that.
Thanks, Dawn. I just wanted to go back quick to that question about the retro piece, and it sounded like I think you might be the rep for that question. And it sounds like they're waiting on a project to be submitted. Are you able to submit that project then?
Are they waiting for a project of something they've already sent, John or Brandon? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I think that they've sent the info in for the rep to submit a project.
I
think that's you.
Yeah, if it's me, then yeah. If it's me, then yeah. Just if you need to reach back out to me or that, I can check and double check to see where that status is on that for sure. Yeah.
Okay, perfect.
Don't hesitate to nudge me. Emails get piled up sometimes, and you know, I just don't always get the, you know, the actual escalation information back as quickly as I'd like to. But yeah, please nudge me if you have a question on that.
Awesome. It sounds like they will do that today again. So thank you for that. And then I know we're at time, and I just want to circle back to the question from the beginning of the call about telehealth. John, I don't know if you have any thoughts on that telehealth question that we had previously.
Yeah, I just got this piece, and I'm just going to read it verbatim. I'm not sure that I fully understand the explanation. I'm going to drop it into chat for further consideration. The telehealth point of service code, i.e. 02, would not be used by an originating site that can bill a facility fee, i.e. Q3014. Instead, the originating site would continue to use the point of service code that applies to the type of facility where the patient is located. And it will be super helpful to see some examples to better understand what the provider is experiencing.
Awesome. So if you are the provider that submitted that question, I know we're going to be wrapping up the call. So if you could, John submitted what he read here into the chat as well. So I would recommend grabbing that. So that way you can ensure that you can follow that or make sure that that's the process that you're using, I suppose. With that, I'm going to pause. Julie, I see you unmuted. Do you have anything you want to add here?
I just had one quick question back to 0156, since it's a known provider issue. Don, are you doing sweeps and catching those and taking care of that, or do providers need to do anything different?
Is this referring to the telehealth issue?
No, I'm seeking a clarification from Don back to G0156.
Yeah, on the home health aid.
Thanks, Julie. I thought you said John too, so I'm sorry. So we are doing that. What I would say to you that, you know, we're trying to capture those, but if we're, for some reason you're still having it and you're not seeing those reprocessed, you know, the easiest way, I know this is, you know, about time and getting, you know, reimbursement financially to you as well. If they are truly Medicaid billed claims and they are being processed as a Medicaid claim, and that's the key to this, then a quick dispute on availability to get that reviewed. If you need the provider update that was back from 2017 that references that, I can get that to you just to kind of throw in there with that. That's going to be the quickest and easiest way. But if you have a number of them that are happening, then I would put them on a template, send them, you know, to the provider experience rep. What we are sweeping for right now is when those denials are happening on the Medicare processing, when they're crossing over as Medicaid claim, but crossing over inadvertently to Medicare. We are trying to capture those, reprocess them into the system as Medicaid, and then, you know, get them processed correctly without that denial. So that was the distinction I was trying to make with making sure that they are not getting processed as Medicare. And I know we're over, but I'll give you a quick, you'll know it's Medicare, obviously, by the Medicare number listed on your remit, has a letter in the middle of it, and the name of the member is always capitalized. The whole name is in caps. And so that is a quick identifier that it's been processed as Medicare, not as Medicaid primary as you had submitted. So the answer to that is those we are sweeping. We really hope that the Medicaid ones can be overturned by the dispute team.
Do you have something in place to fix the Medicaid ones, though, as well? Do you have a time point where that'll be fixed?
No, not at this point. We do not. That's where we're encouraging, you know, to follow that dispute process. Or if you have a bunch of them, Julie, send them to the rep and on the template, and we can submit that in. But I do want, you know, to know that that turnaround time for that process is a little bit longer than going through the dispute process.
All right. Well, thank you, everyone. Again, I want to make a reminder that if you are having some of those pending problems, I'd like to hear about them. Also, if you have some ongoing denial issues, would love to hear about those as well, as we're going to try to compile the information and have it all in one place to better inform the discussion and try to result in some real change for any of the ongoing what I'll characterize, I suppose, as more than just one-off situations, that may be issues that multiple providers are having. So that way we can try to arrive at a better process for everyone. So again, send those to me. My email's in the chat. I would love to help compile those. I think Don was maybe going to send me the spreadsheet. I don't know that it was able to go in the chat. I wouldn't doubt if it wasn't able to go there. So
I'm sorry, it was not, Brandon, but I will get that in there or send it over to you in email.
That would be great. Thanks, Don. Okay. And we will get that the proper information for them to best be able to research any issues. So again, thanks everyone for sticking with us. Thanks for our partners at AmeriGroup for sticking past the allotted time for the call. And appreciate working with you all. And we will chat again next month, same time, same place. So thanks again, and have a great rest of the week.
Thanks, Brandon.